It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey at 1:45. Where are we at in society? The people of India are overvaluing cows to the point of rubbing manure all over themselves to protect against COVID. That was bad enough, but they now have a product on grocery store shelves that may be worse. We'll tell you about it at 1:45. At 1:30, it's Mr. T's birthday, which begs a sports movie question specific to sports movie villains. And in mere minutes, it's Dustin McComas of Orange Bloods joining us for his weekly conversation. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two begins on a Friday, and if you have not clicked into sports until right now, here's your big story of the day from the PGA Championship in Kiawah Island. The wind is whipping, and so is Phil Mickelson. How about a 69 to follow up the 70? He's at minus five, and he is still your leader right now. Martin Laird is trying to put a run on, although he's only through two holes. He's at minus four. Obviously, a lot of golf still to go. Jordan Spieth is going to have to find some good golf. He's just going to need to pray right now. He's plus four. He's done with a 75 today. That's right about the cut line. We'll see if Jordan makes the cut or not. He has not had a great tournament. Dustin Johnson, plus seven. Justin Thomas is plus three. Rory about to get out on the course here in a little while. I think he may be out there now. He starts at plus three. No other big names with big scores. Brooks Koepka's looked good so far, and he is at minus three. By the way, to Nike, why do you keep making Brooks Koepka wear ugly hats? Is he choosing to wear ugly hats? He doesn't strike me as an ugly hat guy, more of a classic look dude, and you're making him wear hats like that. I don't know what we're doing with Nike and Brooks Koepka. They have much better hats. I see them all over the course. He wears the ugly ones for some reason. I don't know why. All right, we've got all that going on, plus some Longhorn news, good, bad, and otherwise. And let's get into a lot of it right now on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. We talk to him every Friday at this time. It's Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. Dustin, how are you?
Doing well, guys.
Let's talk, before we get to the game itself, let's talk capacity. Were you at the Dish last night?
Yes, I was, yeah. And it was, I think there were probably, I think the official attendance was right around 2,500 or something like that. It was definitely, I think, the biggest crowd that they've had, just kind of looking around and feeling the atmosphere and stuff like that, the biggest crowd they've had this season. Probably didn't get enough notice to pack that thing up, considering Texas announced it about 3 hours before first pitch. But it definitely had some of its energy back. It felt the closest it's felt to normal in a really long time, which was fun to be in.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I'm excited about graduations being outdoor events. You know, that'll get affected. And then obviously, you know, a little over 100 days from now with DKR, a full house is going to be great. And Dustin, whoever did show up last night was treated to a really entertaining baseball game. Texas had their opportunity. You talked to us about the K-State pitcher that TCU was going to face and that it was going to be pretty tough. In the end, the Longhorns also faced a pretty good pitcher, and West Virginia got him.
Yeah, they did. It was a pretty competitive, good Big 12 game. Not the cleanest game. I mean, obviously, West Virginia at one point kind of was feeling the road environment a little bit when they dropped that pop-up right in front of home plate when the third baseman, the catcher, and the pitcher kind of all got into a huddle there and botched that situation. But, you know, Jackson Wolf for West Virginia, once he settled in, he's tough. You know, he's a guy that's probably going to go in the top three rounds of the Major League Baseball draft. He's 6'7", lanky lefty, doesn't throw very hard, but what he does is out of that 6'7" frame, where he's letting the ball go is totally unique. I mean, we're talking about extension that's, you know, 7'6", 7'10", maybe even 8 feet out in front of there. So it kind of it makes that 90 miles an hour play like it's 95 and 96 miles an hour out of that kind of frame. So once he got going, he was tough on Texas. But Texas, like you said, they did have their opportunities. Some bad luck with the Zuvia line drive right at the first baseman with the bases loaded. Some tough luck on the Cam Williams play at home plate. I'm still stunned they overturned that because I watched every replay angle that was available to us, and I didn't see conclusive evidence. But just some bad luck that pitch hit the backstop and then bounced literally right back to the catcher. I mean, that's, you just can't plan for that type of situation. So, yeah, West Virginia, you know, fortunately for Texas, I think used all of their best arms last night. Short wasn't that good, but he's their best reliever. And the guy coming in behind there was, it had been up to 99 miles an hour in the past. So at least from the Texas perspective, they made West Virginia kind of burn a couple of bullpen arms, because that's West Virginia's weakness, if you can get into that bullpen and force them to go down the list.
Dustin, since you mentioned the replay, I'll just hit it real quick. Did you see, I'm sure you watched more replays of it than I did. I watched a few. Did you see a view where you can see that mitten or whatever it is they wear, the sliding glove? Did you see the hand hit the plate for sure in your mind?
For sure, no. Which to me, I thought that was a situation where you just got to go with what you call on the field, because I'm looking at it and, like, I'm seeing that black mitt and where he's sliding, and, you know, with that sort of dark brown turf and where the home plate is and stuff, I didn't see anything either way. So I'm just assuming, okay, they're just going to have to come back and kind of stick with what they call it on the field, which is why it was so surprising to me that they overturned it. But, no, I didn't see definitively that he touched on play, but I didn't see definitively that they had anything to overturn it as well.
Right. No, I'm with you. That was such a weird play. And all those colors coming together is strange. Like, you know, people that know baseball know when they say a pitch is on the black, that's not just like a term. It is a part of the play. There's the white of it, the black of it, and you mentioned that dark brown that Texas goes with on the turf. That was such a tough one to look at. I thought they needed to look at it. I mean, I agreed with the idea they needed to look at it, but yeah, in the end, if that had been five all there, I think it would have made some sense too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, let's hope we don't kind of look back to that at the end of this weekend and say, man, was that the sort of thing that potentially costed Texas a Big 12 championship? But, yeah, I think David Pierce was really frustrated because West Virginia was out of reviews. So it was totally up to the umpires to go to that review. But like you, I mean, I think that's a situation you got to look at. I'm just still flabbergasted that they overturned that, because I didn't see anything definitive either way.
Dustin McComas, OrangeBloods.com. So, Dustin, the Ty Madden situation, he obviously did not have his best outing, six innings, gave up the four earned runs, and I'm hearing that you guys that know baseball could sense something early on with him. Is it something that might make you think back to the blister situation, or was it just a guy that didn't have control?
It made me think of it a little bit, you know, and David Pierce was asked about it after the game, and he said Ty has never once mentioned it being an issue the last couple of weeks. So we just got to go with his word from it from there. But, you know, as I'm watching him, I think it was like the fourth or fifth inning, the velocity was kind of down a little bit. You know, he was 92-94 at one point, which for Ty Madden, I mean, he touched 98 miles an hour in the first inning. He's usually a guy that when his velocity's down, it's still 95 miles an hour, which I just thought it was a little bit odd that he was down there. And he kind of looked like a guy that was searching for something a little bit. And the way the ball was coming out of his hand, he just didn't have that same conviction that when he's really gearing up and letting that fastball rip. So that's kind of where my mind went. But David Pierce said after the game, it's not an issue. You know, just I just think the fastball command and maybe just the total confidence in that pitch just wasn't quite there. I mean, the ball was flying out of the yard last night. You know, the ball Antico hit for a solo homer to left center, and the ball West Virginia hit the opposite way into the left field bullpen. I didn't think those balls were going to get out. I was really surprised that both those got out of there. So I don't know if it was just maybe a lack of fastball confidence. Ty Madden threw changeups more. He actually mixed in a rare curveball, which he doesn't really throw very often. It's just primarily been a slider guy. So, yeah, but, you know, David Pierce said it's never once been mentioned in the last couple of weeks, so that's just what we got to go with. But it just kind of looks similar to that Texas Tech start where the velocity went down a little bit, and it's like, huh, what's kind of going on here? But then later in the game, it went back up again.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that as Texas continues to move through. Obviously, game two of the series is tonight, 6:30, right here on the Horn. Tristan Stevens takes the hill for Texas. Dustin, this football story is wild to me. I wanted to get your thoughts on it. We talked about the Jaden Blue thing. You've been covering Texas football for a while now. You've been a fan of Texas football for even longer and followed recruiting. You ever remember a story like this where a guy that's going to be a senior and he's already committed to a school decides I'm not going to play my senior year of high school, opting out?
I can't recall anything like this. I was totally shocked and caught off guard when I saw that tweet go out, and when you see a recruit tweet out a edit or whatever, you're thinking, oh, is he committing, or is he committing to an All-American game, or like, what's kind of going on here? Is he taking an official visit? I didn't expect to read that. I've never really seen anything like it. I'm not in the kid's shoes. I'm not going to think any less of him for making whatever decision he thinks is best. But I have to wonder if he reconsiders at some point, because, I was a terrible high school football player. Like I was bad. Like I started on a 5A team, but I was bad. But just thinking about how much people kind of look forward to that senior season, just even if you don't play or you're a star or whatever, life only gives you one of those, a high school senior season. So I was just really surprised that, this early in the process, a guy of his caliber would just say, I'm going to opt out of my senior season. Because that's just something that, guys start thinking about that, in eighth grade or their freshman years, just kind of gearing up for, all right, I'm going to have that big senior season before I go off to college. So from a total personal standpoint, I'm just not really a fan of it. I hope it's not a trend of things to come. But, hey, if that's what he thinks is best, more power to him. It's his decision, and, he gets one crack at those senior seasons.
Yeah, that's a great point. Talking with Dustin McComas, orangebloods.com. Dustin, we have a couple questions we're throwing at the people today off of some birthdays. One is Ricky Williams' birthday today. So if we assume that the run against A&M is his moment, because certainly it was, what's the next one for you? Is there a run, a game, a performance for you at Texas? Maybe you're in the NFL, but on the field performance from Ricky that you'd put right underneath the A&M situation?
Well, that's a good question. I'm trying to think back to the, was it the Nebraska game where Texas just went to him and went to him and went to him over and over and over again. I hope I'm remembering that game correctly, but I just, whenever I think of Ricky Williams, I think first of how cool he looked in the uniform.
Oh my God, one of those guys
that kind of in that era when you had guys at Florida State and Miami and then just Ricky Williams, just with the visor and, just the jersey and the burnt orange and white and just the way he wore his socks and the way he ran and stuff like that. He always looked so cool. And that's always what kind of stuck with me is when I would play NCAA football and create running backs, I wanted them to look like Ricky Williams. I wanted them to have the visor. I wanted to have that build. I wanted him to kind of run with some power and things like that. But, obviously the A&M run in the call as well, Musburger on the call. I mean, it was such a great call for the moment. That one's going to forever stick out to me. But just his ability to just tote the rock as much as he did and just, bounce off of guys and handle great defenses. But just how cool he looked doing it is going to forever stick with me. I mean, that's when I think of Ricky Williams at Texas, that's kind of what I think of.
He did look the part. There is no doubt about it. That's a great point. Yeah, he did look slick every time he played. The other one, Dustin, is off of Mr. T's birthday. Trey believes, I think he's right, that Clubber Lang is one of the great sports movie bad guys of all time. Give us another one of your favorite sports movie bad guys.
Oh, man. There have been a lot of really good ones over the decades. I mean, Ivan Drago, just not only just the character and the acting and the role and the storyline, but what it represented at the time too, that kind of, that movie just kind of in the setting of what history was like with, USA and Russia and all that stuff going on. That one will always stick with me. Bud Kilmer in Varsity Blues, John Voight was you hated John Voight at the end of that movie. You just hated him. You wanted Billy Bob to fight him. You wanted everybody to punch him. That was just such a fantastic acting job. And, it hits close to home for us because, not just because of the landing strip, but because high school football in Texas and how serious it is and kind of the smaller communities and things like that. That to me will all, Bud Kilmer to me will always be way up there in terms of villains. And also too, Team Iceland and the Mighty Ducks too. I don't know if you just want to go with what was the guy, the Wolf, or the nickname of the guy that coached that team, but It was very easy to hate Team Iceland in D2, the Mighty Ducks. I've never had anything against Iceland. Like, I've never heard of anything anti, you know, between U.S. and Iceland or whatever. But that team led by that coach with the slicked back hair and everything, the way he carried himself and the story behind him, like, knocking guys' teeth out in the NHL, like, it was really, really easy to dislike Team Iceland.
Man, as always, I am so glad I ask you these questions because you're going deep level. You just went to a Mighty Ducks sequel to answer the question. I mean, that is thorough. That is a thorough sports movie breakdown right there. Well done.
Yeah. I mean, I could go on for these for days. Like, you know, the Jesus, does he count from the Big Lebowski? Like,
oh, I think absolutely.
I mean, that guy was a fantastic villain.
You're right. I can't believe you.
I don't know if this guy even said any words, but Chong Li in Bloodsport, I mean, you talk about a classic villain. That's one right there.
That is solid. I can't argue with any of that. The fact that you came up with Bud Kilmer, I'd forgotten about Kilmer. That is a fantastic choice. Dustin McComas, orangebloods.com, at @dmccomas. OB on Twitter. I was going to ask about baseball and too many strikeouts and what the hell do we do, but we'll save that, Dustin, because between now and next week, there'll probably be 9 more no-hitters thrown, and then we'll really have a problem. So we'll get to that next Friday. You have a good weekend, man.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Dustin. Bud Kilmer, Varsity Blues.
Quality answer there.
Please tell me you've seen Varsity Blues.
Yeah.
Greatest bad movie ever made. For me.
Greatest ever made?
I think it's the greatest just like cheesy bad movie ever made, and I will rewatch it every time it's on.
I think there's better bad movies, but yeah, that's on that list for sure.
Best bad sports movie ever made?
I don't know. Does Roadhouse count as a sports movie?
Nah, because there's no actual competition in Roadhouse.
Well,
there's fighting, but there's no competition.
It's Patrick Swayze v. Barr.
Right, but there's no sport in it. It's life. He's fighting through life. There's no competition.
The trophy is who gets to live, Chad.
That's what it is?
Yes.
The trophy is that woman, especially when you see the scene when she walks away not wearing anything.
Trying to think of bad sports movies that are still entertaining. What about like Bad News Bears?
See, the original Bad News Bears, I would say, is not a bad movie.
I think it's a bad movie.
Oh, wow.
I have a bunch of kid actors playing baseball.
No, I would disagree. I think that's a good movie.
Hardball with Keanu Reeves.
No, never seen that one.
Coaching a bunch of kids in the ghetto.
I'm going to take your word that that's not a great one.
Let's be honest. Mighty Ducks is not a very good sports movie either.
A couple that have been thrown in on the text line. Let's make sure we get some of the icons in here. Shooter McGavin has been mentioned.
Oh, that's number one.
I mean, just a great sports bad guy.
Sorry to everybody else, but yeah, Shooter McGavin wins this competition.
And then we have a triumvirate from the Karate Kid run. Of course, you have Johnny Lawrence, you have Sensei Kreese, and you have Terry Silver. And remember, in the next season of Cobra Kai, spoiler alert, if you have not caught up to Cobra Kai, I'm just about to spoil something for you, but pay attention. In the next season of Cobra Kai, I got a weird feeling we might get a Terry Silver. And Terry Silver is what carried Karate Kid 3. It's decent because he's such a good villain.
You say carried Karate Kid 3 like that movie is watchable.
Because of him. It is. Okay. I'm telling you, he's that good of a villain. And you combine him with Kreese, you get the combined powers there.
All right.
Dude, he was vicious. When he's teaching Daniel to punch and the knuckles are bleeding and stuff, and he's enjoying it. Ugh.
Oh, does he take over from Miyagi? Is that what happens?
It's a complicated story, but kind of, yeah. At some point, he like tricks Daniel into letting him train him, and but all the time, all the while, you know that Kreese is still alive. But Daniel is convinced Kreese is dead. And they go through this whole training thing, and it's just evil what they do to him.
Ooh, I've got another good bad guy. I guess technically it's a bad girl from a sports movie.
Okay.
We'll tell the people on the other side.
Let's do it. We'll do that. Plus, more Ricky Williams thoughts on his birthday. Give us some answers to our questions. The Specs text line is 337-3776. We'll also keep you up to date on the PGA, where Phil has made a statement today. This is The Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
We'll be right back.
Some guitar player got a new pedal during the quarantine. What's this, Trey?
This is Muse, Chad. And although the song isn't new necessarily, it's the 20th anniversary of the album Citizen Erased, I believe. And the song is the self-titled Citizen Erased.
It's a nice fuzzy guitar. And I like the contrast, too, when you can fuzzy up a guitar like that, but then give me a clean singer.
Yep.
That's a nice balance. I like that. New music for you on this Friday. So not technically new music, but Trey will throw out some good stuff for you today. We had new Anderson East earlier and new Lord Huron that is out there if you're interested. Also, we are interested in your thoughts on our two big questions of the day. On Ricky Williams' birthday, what is the second best Ricky Williams performance? That second moment you'd think of. We know what number one is. Ricky breaks the record against A&M. It's an easy one to talk about. We're trying to go next level today. And Trey, I think one of our listeners may have found it. Someone says that the bowl win against Mississippi State, the performance against Mississippi State for them is as good, almost as good as either of the wins at the Rose Bowl. And here's Ricky's performance. 30 carries for 203, two touchdowns, 6.8 a tote.
That was in the Cotton Bowl, right?
In the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, I was at that game, and it was a dreary day, but I do remember Ricky dominating.
Ricky goes 200. He lost 5 yards all day.
That's crazy.
Another thing I always look at with Ricky, and I love that Texas has the stats set up all time where – past a certain point, they'll show you the yards lost on runs. And Ricky is great to look at that stat. I think that's a good way to help define a running back. So he gained 208 and he lost 5.
Wow.
All day long. So Ricky Williams, we're asking you that question. People are throwing in some good performances there. Also, speaking of performances, we're looking for your favorite bad guys in sports movies because it is Mr. T's birthday. Yes, he was B.A. Baracus, but Clubber Lang is where we focus in our world. One of the best bad guys in a sports movie. Who are your favorite sports bad guys? Ivan Drago, Johnny Lawrence, Shooter McGavin have all been mentioned. Trey, this says Al Pacino in Any Given Sunday. They consider a bad guy. Is he the bad guy?
No, the bad guy would be the Cameron Diaz character.
Yeah, right? I was going to say, Pacino's not the bad guy in that movie.
And that's an offshoot of one of the sports bad guys that I thought of.
What's
which
that?
Is actually a bad lady. That would be the owner of the Cleveland Indian team in Major League.
There you go. Good call.
That they get to take off pieces of articles of clothing as they go on win streaks.
That is my favorite baseball movie. I love Major League, and maybe my favorite bad guy line for her is when she says, "That's the problem. Maybe we're coddling these guys too much." I remember being a kid thinking, oh, you're evil.
Mm-hmm.
You're terrible. There you go.
Why is it that the bad characters in baseball movies tend to be women? Like the bad guy in Bull Durham is the Susan Sarandon character.
Oh, come on. She's not the bad guy.
What? Yes, she is.
How is she the bad guy?
Because what does she try and do? She tries to sleep with the hot hand on the team. Before he makes his way to that next level.
She tries to spread love is what she tries to do.
She
tries to spread love and her love of baseball. I don't know that there is a bad guy in Bull Durham. Now that I think about
it. Susan Sarandon character.
I don't know.
What happens when Nuke is no longer sleeping with her? He actually starts to become good enough that he ultimately gets called up.
Okay. All right. Yeah, wow, I hadn't thought of it that way. But maybe, I don't know. Let us know some of your favorite bad guys or girls in sports movies. Here's a great one, Trey, and it's one of your favorites, Bill Murray in Kingpin.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even remember the character's name right now, but it's a great bad guy.
Big Ernie McCracken. I'll tell you the name.
That's right.
Boy, if there's one that gives Shooter McGavin a run for his money, it's Big Ern.
That is so good. And then Dustin McComas was just on with us and mentioned DeJesus from Lebowski.
It's another good one.
Turturro is awesome in that one. Yes, Ernie McCracken in Kingpin is now being mentioned multiple times.
Don Johnson in Tin Cup.
Yep. That's
that character.
Good one, and a movie I had not seen. I just saw that movie a couple years ago for some reason. I really enjoyed it. He was good. Good bad guy. It helps when the bad guy's handsome.
Yeah.
For some reason. When the bad guy's, and that's why the Major League thing is great, because she's attractive. Mm-hmm. The prettier you are, the better bad guy you make. Another offshoot of the pretty people rule. You can be a better, more effective bad guy if you happen to be attractive.
Who's the bad guy in Hoosiers?
The maker of the alcohol? No. I don't know.
Who are you rooting against in the end?
I mean, I don't know that. I don't think there really is a bad guy in Hoosiers.
Who are you rooting against in the end?
You're just rooting for that team.
Well, who are they playing at the end?
I don't know. They're playing some random team, but they never give you a reason to hate those guys other than they're the opponent. Mm. Maybe the closest you'd get would be the guy that plays Harris in Major League is a parent in that. Is it one of the parents that didn't want the coach to stick around?
Maybe.
Because they tried. I mean, Dennis Hopper's character is not a bad guy. He's flawed. But you don't root against him.
No.
When he's sitting in that bed at the end in the hospital, the recovery, wherever he is, hospital or whatever. Like, you want him to do well because you want the team to do well.
I root against the kid whose granny shotting the free throws, if I'm being perfectly honest.
How dare you? How dare you? Johnny Lawrence from Karate Kid mentioned again. Yes, we got to have him in there. Here's one, Trey. Great bad guy. One of my favorite bad guys in a sports movie. Judge Smales from Caddyshack.
That's a good one.
I mean, come on.
That is a good one.
That's a world class. One, another vote for Voight in Varsity Blues. Yes, Bud Kilmer is getting love. One of the other great thing about Varsity Blues is just how unrealistic the movie is.
Oh, yeah.
Like the ending sequence that you feel yourself being drawn into.
From the whipped cream bikini on, that movie was unrealistic, Chad.
But I just can't stop watching. I don't know what it is. In Hoosiers and Bull Durham, the life is the bad guy, is the question.
Life is the bad guy, okay.
It says the life
That's interesting.
Is the bad guy. I could argue that, too. That's probably good. Someone, here's an alternate thought. Somebody says Daniel LaRusso is one of the best bad guys in
that
the sports
theory's
movie.
Out there, and when you watch the TV show, it gives it more credence.
Someone else agrees with Dustin McComas and says that entire Team Iceland in Mighty Ducks 2 deserves bad guy status. I've never seen it.
No, I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
And, I'm trying to think Mighty Ducks 3 who the bad guy was, because I think at that point, do they go back to the Mighty Ducks? Anyhow, that movie's probably not worth wasting that much brain power on, much like Karate Kid 3, Chad, but I'm glad that one of us has spent time on either of those
movies. You, good villain. Not a good movie, but a good villain. This says the town is the bad guy in Hoosiers.
The town.
I could see that.
All right.
Kind of thoughts, certain thoughts.
But the town is rooting for the team, though.
Ultimately, eventually they are, but as the movie's going on, they're fighting against some of the things, and then eventually they get on that. By the end of the movie, I would argue there is no bad guy.
Well, is there a team that you're rooting to not win the game at the end?
Yes. So
who?
I just don't know. It's so not a bad guy, I can't even tell you who they are.
So you're saying that if there is a bad guy, it's the team that's playing the Hoosiers at the end.
The team that's playing Hickory. The real team was the Hickory team. I don't know what they called them in the movie in terms of the other team.
So you're saying the team of black guys is the bad guy in that movie. That's what you're saying.
I couldn't even recall that there were black guys on the other team, honestly. I don't remember anything about that other team.
This is a team of black guys.
Because they never developed that story.
So you're rooting against the black guys in Hoosiers.
What you're trying to do, and there's no reason for you to be doing it. That's what's going on. Now, this is an old school reference. The douchey frat guy in Breaking Away. I've not seen the movie.
Breaking Away?
I think John Voight is in Breaking Away. It's like a bike movie, a bicycle movie.
Never heard of it.
The Daggers in Thrashin'. We're going to take your word on that one.
Huh?
Says Brother in Field of Dreams. Not exactly sure what that
Brother
is. Yeah. I've seen Field of Dreams.
Oh, yeah. The Brother. The red-haired guy from 40-something.
Okay, gotcha. The pilot in Alive.
Wow. Mm.
Well done. Well done.
No, I would argue the bad guy in Alive are the skinny guys who died in the plane crash.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, your favorite sports movie bad guys or... your favorite other moments from Ricky Williams outside of the A&M performance. The big A&M run is an easy one. We're going for those other performances from Ricky on his birthday today. Happy birthday to Ricky. Happy birthday to Mr. T, which has created these two questions today.
How about the sports bad guy topic? From Caddyshack 2, The writer and director of the movie.
I agree. I was going to say, if you do anything but who created the movie, yeah, no, they're dead on. Dead on. Worst sequel by a long shot.
It's up there.
Long shot.
There are some bad sequels, but it's probably at the top of the list.
Because when you weigh it against the original, now I know people that don't like Caddyshack, but for as much as I like Caddyshack and how much I don't like Caddyshack 2, that's what makes it to me the worst sequel that I have ever seen.
Yeah, Kevin's on the anti-Caddyshack list, correct?
I think Kevin's not the biggest Caddyshack fan. I think that is true. But dude, we can go through all kinds of sequels. We just went and we reviewed the Coming to America sequel. It's a lot of things. It ain't Caddyshack 2.
No, it's better than Caddyshack 2. You're right.
I mean, it's far north of that.
I think that Karate Kid 2 is starting to go there.
Oh, come on. But it's coming way better.
But 3, better than Caddyshack 2?
Absolutely.
What?
Without an attempt.
Okay.
I'm just going to, it's not great. It's way better than Caddyshack 2. Way better than Caddyshack 2. I don't think there's anything in that category for me. I'm going to need to hear it. If people want to throw one down, let me know. That is the craziest bad sequel I've ever seen.
I'm guessing one of the Air Bud sequels was as bad as Caddyshack 2.
Right, but the original Air Bud's going to suck for me.
Hold on now. Air Bud was good.
When you weigh them out, that's the key. That's the key to a bad sequel. It is the juxtaposition to the original. If you make a horrible sequel, like Mighty Ducks, somebody's mentioning a Mighty Ducks movie. I haven't seen any of them. I don't want to see any of them. I don't need to see any of them. So if it's bad, I don't know. I never saw it. But Caddyshack means something to me. So that's why that sequel hits me definitely the wrong way.
Oh, another good bad guy from a sports movie.
Yep.
Brian Song.
Cancer?
Yeah.
That's the bad guy?
That's maybe the best bad guy.
It is the best and worst bad guy ever, so I got to give you that one. All right, up next, where are we at in society? Apparently the people of India are continuing to try to gross us out and cure COVID at the same time. We'll get to that story coming up on The Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Like that voice. What do you got, Trey?
This is a collaboration between Sharon Van Etten and Angel Olsen. The song is called Like I Used To.
All right. New music for you on a Friday. Good tune there. Hope you got some good tunes rolling for the weekend. Today looks like a nice weather day. I'll knock on wood as I say that. But rain chances, I'm seeing like 15 to 20, maybe 25% today. So for Trey and his son and all of you that may be headed out to the dish, I think you're going to be all right. It's tomorrow that things get weird with the rain when we get up towards 50%-ish. Hopefully it'll stay away and let Texas baseball and Texas softball get these games in.
Yeah, I need that chance of rain to push into the afternoon tomorrow so I can actually play some volleyball in the morning.
There you go.
So make it happen, weather guessers.
Come on, meteorology. Let's get that going. A lot of stuff happening today. Somebody says, I cannot remember his name, but the judge in The Natural as one of their favorite sports movie bad guys. It is Clubber Lang's birthday today. Happy birthday to Mr. T. Happy birthday to Ricky Williams. We're talking about your favorite Ricky Williams moments. We know the A&M run is a big one, and it's huge, and it always gets talked about. What are some of those other moments with Ricky that you'll always remember? We're getting into all of that. Right now, though, Trey's going to tell you what weird things are going on around the world. Here we go.
Where are we at in society today?
All right, Chad, before we get into the real story for today, I need to offer a big congratulations up to those who are either in or with kids in a public school in the state of Alabama.
Yes.
The governor there has signed a new bill into law that will allow kids in Alabama public schools to practice yoga. So yoga can be a part of the physical education curriculum now.
Why?
Why? It wasn't allowed previously.
They wouldn't allow yoga?
It was banned previously.
Why?
I mean, do we really want to get into that one?
No, not really. No, we don't have time for that. We don't have time. You're saying now yoga is allowed in Alabama public schools.
It was, if you really want the true answer as to why it had been banned, it happened in 1993 because of yoga's connections to Hinduism. That's really why the State Board of Education banned it.
Fair enough.
In the early to mid-90s. But it's back now, so congratulations in Alabama. And it'll probably help you to try downward dog a couple of times to realize that you need to get a better grip on your overall diet and physical fitness.
It didn't. Yoga certainly gave me a little different perspective on what I was eating every day.
It's humbling.
It is. No doubt about it. All right. This will be humbling too, I think.
Speaking of Hinduism, Hinduism is the most popular religion in India, Chad.
Is that right?
I don't know if it's Hinduism that has Indian folk worshipping cows like they do. Actually, I do know that Hinduism is big on the cow.
That is
the, which is part of the reason why we've been hearing stories for literally a year now where citizens of India have been trying to protect themselves against COVID by using cow manure.
Yeah.
Literally, people going out to the country and rolling around in barns where cows stay.
So they're like rubbing it on themselves, believing it's creating a barrier.
Rubbing it on themselves, right? Like a housewife would a mud bath at her local spa.
Like lotion.
And that's gross enough.
That is.
And unfortunately, I think we've now found an example that at least matches, if not goes beyond,
goody,
rubbing manure all over yourself to protect against COVID.
Do tell.
There are now flavored drinks on the shelves of grocery stores in India that is essentially cow urine in a cardboard carton that, yes, is flavored, Chad.
Oh, my God.
The flavors include orange, spearmint, and watermelon. At least the flavors that I'm seeing on this picture here.
Hey, I give credit to the person who decided to put the word water in one of the flavors. So, you know, I give you a little love there, but oh my God. So I guess, look, if you want to have like a thought that the cow is some sort of deity, I guess you can do that. That's what they do. It's there. You got to, you know, respect somebody else's religion. But can you not expand the healing ideas out any more than that? Like, does it have to be all about the cow? Is the cow the only healing thing in their lives?
The cow is the lauded animal in that religion. There are other animals that they think fondly of, but the cow is where things really begin and end.
Wow.
And by the way, the flavors, I'm just now reading through this article. The flavors also include pineapple.
Oh, come on. Now you're just making stuff up.
No, this is real. And that's, how about this one?
That's gross.
The pure option for those who don't want artificial sweeteners in their cow urine drink.
Cow urine zero sugar? Is that what they
cow
got?
Cow urine zero.
Oh, my God.
Diet cow urine.
That is so gross. Cow urine pure, the clear version. Oh, my.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's so popular. There are already people that are coming out with recipes for cocktails.
Oh, come on.
Pun not intended there.
Yeah. Right.
Cow urine cocktails. I'm assuming vodka is not a bad mixer for any of those.
Vodka is a great mixer for everything. I can attest to that. But please do not mix it with cow urine. No, that's not happening. Stop doing that.
Mm.
There are boundary lines in life, Trey. This hit me the other day while I was driving. It's specifically important in life to find boundary lines beyond which you consider things gross, disgusting, and filthy. Those are really important boundary lines. When you find them, don't cross them.
Yeah.
They're there for a reason. You do not need to be, let me make this very clear. You do not need to be drinking the urine of any creature for any reason. We are way more advanced than that on this planet. I don't care what part of the planet you're on. I don't care what religion you dig. I don't care who you worship, where you go to church. I don't care. even your trust level for the media, medicine, doctor. If you ever get to the point where you're thinking, I might as well drink urine, unless you're trapped somewhere and it's needed, you don't need to do that.
Now, you say that with the luxury of the clean water systems that we have here in America. If you look at the potable water situation over in India, you might consider drinking some cow urine, too.
Well, that may be true. Not knowingly, though. That's a different discussion. If science tells me that the urine is actually cleaner than the water, now we got another problem to deal with.
Did you ever see the backwards episode of Seinfeld where George refuses to go to the bathroom the entire time?
Yes.
That's legit.
Oh, I remember.
You got to be careful.
I remember when that episode aired, and I just thought it was brilliant. I've never seen anybody try that since. Running the episode specifically backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was nice. And the credits and that was really, really good.
I wonder if that episode was in the final two seasons. If so, we should ask Jeff Schaefer about that one next time we speak with him.
Yeah.
To see where that idea came from.
I know. I don't even remember Monty Python doing that. They messed around a lot with, you know, the title sequences and let's do the credits at the end instead of at the beginning instead of the end. And they messed around with a lot of that. I don't remember them doing a pure backwards episode, though.
Mm.
That was incredible. Every time that's on, I always just kind of sit and marvel at how they pulled all that off. That was really good. All right. Where are we at in society? I've been needing mouthwash for where are we at in society the last few days. So they got some ideas in India, kids. 2 o'clock hour coming up, 100% capacity at UT events, and a running back has decided for now he does still want to come to Texas, but he does not want to show up for his senior year of high school. We'll talk about it on the Horn.